Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
Monday. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast here. We're, of course, presented by ESPN, The Jock, as you heard the monotones of Logan Weber say there on that intro. Of course, we're also available via basically all podcasting sites, but the two main ones, of course, being Spotify and Apple iTunes Podcasts. Partner, how was your weekend?
It was great.
Great.
I had a great weekend. So, I, of course, did the game Friday night. You and I both did the exact same game. Willard
yeah, real barn burner there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the game itself wasn't very entertaining. It wasn't competitive. Knicks has got a very, very talented team. And the Coach Perry over there at Knicks is doing a great job of getting guys that weren't football players before to get involved. He's getting basketball players for that talented Knicks of basketball program involved now. Yep. Cale Combs, who looks like he could play Division I football just as easily as he could play Division I basketball. He's that good. I mean, his ability to, his body control when he's in the air catching passes is outrageous. But we did that Friday night and had a lot of fun. Had to go to bed pretty early because I was back here at the studio this morning, or Saturday morning, worked the morning shift, you know, did my thing, got off at 3 o'clock just in time to get back to my apartment before the Iowa Hawkeyes kicked off at 3:30. Cy-Hawk Trophy. It was Iowa versus Iowa State. Number 10 Iowa, number 9 Iowa State. And the Hawks got the win. Big win, 27-17. And really, it wasn't even that close. They scored with their backups with like 4 minutes left in the game when it really didn't matter. We were already up 3 scores, blah, blah, blah. It was what it was. It wasn't overly concerning, right? They made the score look a little bit closer than it was, but it wasn't an impressive feat by the offense. It was just the fourth time since 2016 that a team had less than 200 yards of total offense and won the game, which was kind of outrageous. But when you force 4 turnovers that lead to 20 offensive points, you're going to win a lot of games doing that. One of those was a scoop and score. Matt Hankins had 2 interceptions.
He did not look good for Iowa State.
No. Brock Purdy did not look good. Brock Purdy for Heisman this, Brock Purdy for Heisman that, like Iowa State fans have been clamoring for 4 years. Well, I have one accurate statistic on Brock Purdy, and that is he is 0-5 in his career against the Iowa Hawkeyes. Okay, so I just want to point something out because I crunched the numbers and I tweeted this out the other day. Let me just find the tweet real quick. Because it definitely made me laugh. Yeah,
it wasn't really a game where you expect. It was a 9-10, of course, and really, it kind of just looked like Iowa's defense took control of the game from first quarter onward.
Yeah, it was just. I mean, the offense was not good. It was 3-0 at the end.
Petras looked pretty subpar. He looked kind of shaky,
especially in the first quarter. In the second quarter and on, he looked much better.
Yeah.
But the offensive line just couldn't really get anything going in terms of a running game. Yeah, Tyler Goodson was held pretty much in check, who, I mean, he was a first-team All-Big Ten running back last year and a preseason All-American. But then again, on the other side, Breece Hall, a Heisman front-runner, you could say, won one of the best running backs in college football last year.
In the Big 12, yeah.
Yeah, projected to be some were projecting him to be a first-round pick. Didn't get much going. He only had like 69 yards rushing on like 21 carries or something. Didn't have a great day. But come next year's Iowa-Iowa State game, it will have been 2,919 days since the Cyclones beat the Hawkeyes in football. Now, that will mean from 2014 to 2021, right? That equates to 7 years, 364 days, which means there will be second graders. There will be Iowa State fans who are second graders come next year that have never seen Iowa State beat Iowa. And I'm not going to lie to you. I don't feel bad for those kids. That makes me so happy as a Hawkeye fan. And it makes me happy today, Matt, to see you wearing an Iowa Hawkeye jersey, bringing out, you know, your Iowa Hawkeye ties and wearing a nice little jersey. It looks a little old.
It's old because I got it. I'm wearing uniform number 12, and that's when Ricky Stanzi was the quarterback.
Absolutely.
And that was whenever we got that jersey. And unfortunately, he probably got $0.00 from me, you know, buying this jersey, or my mother buying this jersey. But no, it's an XL jersey, and I haven't been able to wear XL in years. So I thought, you know, Hawkeyes won, Mizzou Tigers lost. I don't have any Bears wear. So yeah, just slap on the Hawkeyes.
And so, I mean, it was a fun weekend. Seeing Iowa beat Iowa State on Saturday, Missouri State able to get a big win. I did end up having to come back into work Saturday night.
Shocking.
We had some miscommunication, some snafu go on here at the station, so I had to come back in and work Springfield Cardinals Saturday night, which was no big deal because I was already in a great mood. Iowa had won. The game was pretty much over at that point. There was like 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
So I just turned got Hulu on my phone in the car and drove over here and watched the end of it in my car. The Springfield Cardinals got a win. Missouri State won in an absolute barn burner.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that game was so back and forth. It was ridiculous. I couldn't really watch the game. So I was listening to it on the radio while simultaneously just like refreshing my Twitter feed for Wyatt Wheeler tweets. Man, there was just a lot going on. Those two, I mean, Art and Wyatt, they do a great job hosting Sports Talk every week, and they each did a great job Saturday in their coverage of the Missouri State game. On top of that, you know, as an Iowa fan, Iowa got a commitment from a four-star shooting guard who's the number one player in the state of Iowa in the class of 2022.
Nice.
So that was just a nice little cherry on top of my Saturday. And then Sunday rolled around. You know, we've got the first Sunday of NFL football. So that's what I sat around all day and just watched NFL football. You know, I watched the noon kickoff game on CBS, which was Steelers-Bills.
That was a good game. Yeah.
It was a great game. I was kicking myself because I had the Steelers defense, and I elected not to start them because I was afraid of what Josh Allen and that Bills offense was going to be able to do. Well, the next 16 weeks of the season, I'm starting the Steelers defense.
Yeah, and in that same sense, I benched Dak and Kyler Murray for said Josh Allen, and it didn't come back to bite me in my fantasy league that I'm in with a group of buddies of mine, but yeah, I could have used the 27 or 33 points from Kyler Murray. It would have been a total blowout, but I'm still going to win tonight
There were a couple of things that could have bit me in the butt in terms of fantasy. You know, I didn't start the Steelers defense, who got 15 and a half points, versus the Bills defense, who I started, got 12.
That's not as bad.
But it's really not that bad.
Nah.
But I was really kicking myself watching the Chiefs game. Because, of course, my team was auto-drafted. Anybody who's listened to the previous podcast knows that my team was auto-drafted because I was calling a high school football game on Friday night a couple weeks ago, and that was when our draft was. Well, my auto-draft picked Travis Kelce in the first round, which I'm super cool with. But when they picked Travis Kelce in the first round, I had no running backs, none whatsoever. So I was in uber panic mode. I knew I needed a running back. I knew I needed running backs. So I made a deal with a buddy in my fantasy league. It was Travis Kelce. I traded away Travis Kelce for Miles Sanders, Noah Fant, and Terry McLaurin. And I was like, that sounds like a good enough deal for me. So we go, right? The games are playing. Miles Sanders ends up with 17 fantasy points for me. He had a good day. Noah Fant ended up with 12 and a half. So, you know, I got 30 fantasy points out of those guys.
Nice.
And then Travis Kelce starts playing. He catches one touchdown pass. He catches another touchdown pass. And I'm like, oh, dear God. Travis Kelce, I traded away Travis Kelce to the guy I'm playing week one, which I did not realize. I thought that was really going to come back to bite me. I was, you know, it was Travis Kelce on offense for the Chiefs and Nick Chubb on offense for the Browns that this guy had both of them. So, I mean, it's like no defense played throughout the game. I was in full-on panic mode. Thankfully, that was about it. And then the one thing I didn't expect was Matt Gay, the kicker for the Rams, to go out and score 12 points. I mean, I ended up winning this game. I'm up by 6 right now, and I've still got Tyson Williams to play tonight.
Right.
So, you know, aside from, you know, the guy has 2 carries for -5 yards and 2 fumbles or something like that, outrageous.
Yeah.
I'm going to win my first game. So, you know, we're 1-0. We come out unscathed, which is a good start. But, Man, that Chiefs game was entertaining.
That was very fun to watch.
It made my heart hurt, right? I was crazy. I was up and I was down. I felt like I had high blood pressure.
You
got to
work out just watching that
time.
Game, yeah.
Whew! It was something else. Absolutely something else. But, you know, we talk about it a lot. Offense is such a big part of the NFL nowadays. But the game of football especially, and really any sport, you know, you talk about basketball, the same way. In order to come back in a football game, you know, one of the biggest advantages you can have in the game of football that will lead your team to a win is the turnover margin. No turnovers in the first half of the game. Browns go into the locker room up 22-10. Second half, Chiefs do what they always do. They don't turn the ball over. Patrick Mahomes has never thrown an interception in the month of September in his entire career. Browns have three turnovers in the second half. Yeah, I mean, technically only two, really. The fumble from Nick Chubb and the interception from Baker Mayfield. But I really consider that drop, the punt that the punter muffed it.
Yeah.
And that's a turnover. Mm-hmm. In my eyes, that's a turnover. So three turnovers in the second half, which led to points, which gave the Chiefs the win. That was all they needed. You know, they needed to generate turnovers. The Chiefs defense, minus Frank Clark, minus Tyrann Mathieu, minus Willie Gay, we knew that this defense wasn't going to be where it needed to be. You know, this defense was not at full strength. And yeah, they looked really bad in the first half. I mean, they really almost let them score on the last play of the half there with the backyard BS from longest yard
sure.
type business.
Yeah.
That made me so nervous watching that. But they did enough. You know, as good as this Chiefs offense is, nobody's expecting the Chiefs defense, or at least nobody should be expecting the Chiefs defense to be as good as the Steelers defense or the Bills defense. You know, you shouldn't be expecting that.
Sure.
I'm not expecting a top five defense. I'm expecting an average defense that's able to create turnovers. That's what the Chiefs defense has been able to do the last couple of years. Forcing fumbles, Tyrann Mathieu in that secondary, generating interceptions. You know, L'Jarius Sneed and Tyrann Mathieu last year were one of the top five duos in the NFL in terms of total interceptions between a cornerback safety duo in the NFL last year. So they were able to do enough. You know, they allowed 22 points in the first half, 7 in the second half. Meanwhile, the Browns allowed 23 points in the second half. That got them the win. Tyreek Hill showed he's a top five receiver in the NFL.
Uh-huh.
11 catches, 197 yards, and a touchdown.
Thank you, Mr. Hill, for your contributions in my fantasy league.
Absolutely. Patrick Mahomes, 75% completion percentage, 337 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. Showing everybody, once again, hey, when you're talking about the MVP race, my name should be at the top of that list. And that, I mean, I'm dogging on myself a little bit there because I put a lot of stock into Josh Allen. And Josh Allen looked good. I'm not going to say he looked terrible by any means. He was running for his life lot of the game.
True, yeah.
But, I mean, 30 for 51, so he still completed almost 60% of his passes. You know, not great, but not bad. 270 yards and a touchdown.
Meh.
He did okay.
Yeah, it's meh.
It really was meh. That's about the best way you can describe it. But, you know, it's just one of those things. The Chiefs proved once again Patrick Mahomes is a force to be reckoned with in this league. And the trip to the Super Bowl, if you want to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC, you still got to come through Arrowhead Stadium.
Yep. Or is it GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium?
Oh, yeah, GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. I apologize.
Yeah, I know. The announcers kind of made note of that. Jim Nantz and Tony Romo, who do such a fantastic job. And Nantz said it was GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium here in Kansas City. And I'm just thinking, it's just Arrowhead. Let's just call it Arrowhead Stadium. Like, naming rights, yeah, okay, cool. You got it on the side of your stadium, your facility. Let's just call it Arrowhead, which it has been for the majority of the past 50 years. So.
Yeah, and I also, I forgot to talk about this too. So, one thing that I don't think is being talked about a lot in regards to this game, and throughout the NFL, really. So, during the game, right, Patrick Mahomes has a great day, 27 for 36, 337, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
But people failed to bring up, I mean, people have failed to remember the fact that during the game, Patrick Mahomes broke the NFL record for passing yards and touchdowns through a player's first 50 career starts.
And he's only started in 47 games.
Only started in 47 games. He's now got, in 47 career starts, 14,489 passing yards and 117 touchdowns. And it's not even being talked. That's how good Patrick Mahomes is. The guy is breaking records and nobody's talking about it. That's how good Patrick Mahomes is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's, this was, in my opinion, win or lose, this was the perfect week one game for the Kansas City Chiefs. You are taking on one of the three teams in the AFC, in my opinion, that are going to be the biggest threats to take down the Chiefs in terms of an AFC championship game. So think about this. The Chiefs won. They are the main contender, the number one team for the AFC championship crown. The Bills, who I had as my number two,
lost.
The Titans, who I had as my number three, lost and lost big. They got smoked by the Cardinals. And the Browns, who I had as my number four, also lost. The Ravens and or Steelers would be my number five. The Steelers, of course, beat the Bills. The Ravens play tonight on Monday Night Football. And I would imagine they would get the win. They're playing the Raiders. But, I mean, of the top four teams that I would have put in my top four for the big for AFC Championship contenders, three of the four lost. The Kansas City Chiefs were the only ones that come out on top. And the Bills, the Browns gave the Chiefs everything they could handle.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely everything they could handle. And they handled it. They didn't handle it particularly well by any means, but they handled it enough. You know, and now you have to, if you're the Chiefs, you realize that you've got some holes in your rush defense. And now you realize you've got to shore that up because there was only one team in the NFL last year that ran the ball more than the Cleveland Browns.
And that's the Ravens.
And that's the Ravens who you play next week. Which, frankly, surprises me that the Titans didn't run the ball more than anybody in football. But really,
yeah,
they weren't.
They
were
third. Have one of the best running backs in the game in Derrick Henry. And, that Titans-Cardinals game, good God, that was brutal. Especially, it was in Tennessee, too. So the Cardinals came into Tennessee and just gave them a good old-fashioned ass-whooping. No offense for those. Or and, you know, it's still FCC-approved, by the way. That is allowed by FCC regulations. But, no, I mean, you can't describe it anywhere else. That Cardinals-Titans game was just a country beatdown in Tennessee. All right, my weekend was all right. I know we kind of went down a rabbit hole of football talk there from, you know, our weekend plans. But weekend was all right. Like I said, you and I did the same game for different streaming services, of course. Nixon won big time. They look really good, obviously. And they were even without their best running back, Ramon Green, and they still just ran the ball over and over and over and over and over again. It got nauseating.
Yeah,
and
Case and Hammett ran the rock.
Yeah, and even when Wood would finally bring their defense down, they would just throw it over the top to Kale Combs, and he would catch it, you know, and the dude's incredible. He's 6'4", and he's just, like you said, able to control his body well, catching the ball all the time. It's it was incredible to watch, but not incredible if you're a Willard broadcaster and calling that game, which I was. But anyway, you know, it is what it is. Well, Knicks is a good team, and Willard is on the bit of rebuilding side. But Saturday, I had a blast. Me, a buddy of mine, and his buddy who came up from Kansas City, we went out to some open land and shot some guns, AR-15, a couple of pistols. That was, I've honestly haven't shot guns in a long time, like I want to say 4, 5, maybe 6 years. And being with those guys out there, it was refreshing. It was really fun just to have that experience. Did that, you know, went home, kind of relaxed for the rest of the night. Had a few frosty ones and watched the Bears game and, of course, the Iowa game. And then Sunday, kind of loafed around, watched the Sunday games, of course. Flipped between the channels, watched the Bills-Steelers games and the Seahawks-Colts game, along with some Cardinal baseball. And then later that night, I went to a party. One of my best friends is going away to New Amsterdam, and she's going to stay there for a long time. She's going to start living there as a nanny over there, an au pair, I think it's what it's called.
Mm.
So had a going away party there, had some fun at her house. Then we went to Steak and Shake for whatever reason later that night. And, you know, honestly, I haven't had a Steak and Shake shake in a long time. Man, they're good. I need to have them more often. But if I do, I'm going to get back to where I was in the 300 range. So should probably back off of that. But did that Sunday night and had a good weekend overall. So, indeed, the weekend was a dub, a W. No L's this weekend at all.
Big success.
Though some teams in college football did. You know, really three games that kind of caught my attention. Of course, the Iowa-Iowa State game. How Iowa, in a 9-10 matchup, and Iowa technically being the underdog in that one, basically having their way against Iowa State in Ames. Nonetheless, they were in somewhat of a hostile environment. It wasn't, I mean, it is Iowa. You know, there's not much, you know, distance between them, of course. Saw that game, thought that was a blowout. Texas and Arkansas. Wow.
Yeah.
And Texas wants to go to the SEC. That's funny. And then, of course, the big noon game, Ohio State and Oregon upsetting the Buckeyes there. But those are my big three takeaways from the college football scene. What about you, Logan?
I would tend to agree with you, honestly. I mean, I watched the Iowa State game, and I also watched the Oregon Ohio State game while I was here at the studio. I was working as well, but you know, just watching the game periodically as I went along throughout my day here at the office. But it just oozed like a Big 12 game. It was just no defense, none whatsoever. I mean, it was fun to watch, but it was also sort of like hard to watch because like neither team could generate a stop at all. I mean, Oregon didn't throw the ball nearly as well as Ohio State did. I mean, CJ Stroud was throwing the rock. 35 of 54 for 484 yards and 3 touchdowns. Anthony Brown went 17 of 35 for 236 and 2 touchdowns. So it wasn't an accurate day throwing the ball, but he was still able to get the ball downfield and score touchdowns. But, I mean, good Lord. Oregon ran for 269 yards.
Ouch.
And 3 touchdowns. They averaged 7 yards a carry.
Nice defense, Buckeyes. Sheesh.
And Ohio State ran for 128 on 31 carries, averaged 4.1 yards a carry. There was, I mean, just no defense played throughout this game. It was just sort of this wild back and forth that you watched go on the whole time. I mean, just Oregon punted 7 times, which sort of surprised me. I didn't realize they punted that many times. Ohio State only punted 3 times, and they lost. I mean, I couldn't fathom watching that game. Like, how is nobody able to stop anybody? There were a combined 59 first downs. Over 1,100 yards of total offense.
That is a Big 12 game. Sheesh.
Yeah. Time of possession was really, really even. There was a 18-second difference in time of possession in Ohio State's favor. That was it. I mean, it was just mind-boggling to watch that game and just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Nobody could. I mean, the first quarter was the only time anybody could get a stop. And then it was just scores galore in the last three quarters. Oregon goes 14-14-7. Ohio State 7-7-14. So they just it seemed like Oregon just had more possessions in those last three quarters than Ohio State did, and they got the win. And they were able to generate the only turnover of the game on that pick that interception off of CJ Stroud late in the fourth quarter when Ohio State was driving and looked to tie the game up. It was wild to watch that game just sort of go back and forth like that the entire afternoon. And then, like you said, Arkansas is a team that hasn't finished higher than third in their conference in a decade. They have been a perennial bottom feeder, not only in the SEC, but in their own division for a while. And they just, from the opening kickoff, just controlled the game against Texas. They didn't stand a chance in that one. And now you expect to go over to the SEC and have any semblance of success? You got beat by 19, and it wasn't even that close to a team that only had 138 yards passing.
Sheesh, Texas.
Arkansas had 130. They threw the ball 19 times. KJ Jefferson was 14 of 19 for 138 yards and an interception. Didn't throw a touchdown. But what you did do, in typical Big 12 defensive fashion, you allowed 333 yards rushing and 4 touchdowns. 7 yards a carry.
Wow.
Arkansas had five players that had at least 40 yards rushing. Five.
I can't believe they gave up that much. I know it's Big 12, but my God.
Yeah.
So 300 rushing yards?
These are the average yards per carry for every guy that had that had a carry for Arkansas. Traylon Smith had 75 yards rushing on 12 carries, 6.3 yards a carry. KJ Jefferson, the quarterback, 73 yards rushing on 10 carries, 7.3 yards a carry, 9.6 yards a carry, 6.3 yards a carry, 7.3 yards a carry, 29 yards a carry.
Oh, Texas.
And then they sacked KJ Jefferson twice, which accounted for negative 7 yards rushing in terms of team. Yikes.
Yeah, yikes is right. My goodness, Texas. And they think they're going to be competitive in the Big 12 SEC, yeah.
And they didn't do much, to be honest with you, either. They had 138 yards rushing. They did it on 41 carries, so 3.4 yards a carry, which is not what you want. You want to average about four.
Sure.
They had three rushing touchdowns. They threw for 118 yards. So you had just over 250 yards of total offense against an Arkansas team that has not been among the upper echelon of the SEC. And now you want to go join them. If you can't beat Arkansas, who the hell do you expect to beat?
Maybe Vanderbilt. But then again, everyone beats Vanderbilt. Or Tennessee. But still, I mean, yeah, you know, Arkansas is in a bit of a weird place. They're kind of like in the same spot as like Mizzou, in a sense. They're like, they're not bad in the SEC, but they're not exactly at the level of, say, like an Alabama or Florida or Texas A&M, for that matter. So, I don't know. But, yeah, Arkansas, they're not a bad team, but my gosh. I mean, and Texas was, what, ranked 15 coming into this game?
Yes.
And you got beat by an unranked sort of medium, like, average SEC team in Arkansas. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, moving over to the Sunday scene, of course, the NFL going on. And, you know, Logan, you got the advantage this week in picks. You and I, like, had differing picks four different times, and you won three out of the four of those differing picks. You picked the Eagles to beat the Falcons, which happened. You picked the Chargers to beat the football team, Washington, of course. That happened. The only pick that I got right were the Saints beating the Packers. And you thought I was insane for calling that one out, but, man, you know, I thought it'd be much more closer game than what we saw, but, man, Aaron Rodgers was terrible.
He was running
Florida
for his life.
That was he?
The offensive line was an atrocity. Now, I'm not saying that Rodgers didn't have a bad day, because he did. But my God, he was, I mean, he only was sacked once, but it seemed like he was pressured every single time he dropped back to pass, especially in that first half.
Whew, but still had an atrocious game. And then, of course, you got the Cardinals beating the Titans, right? But, yeah, I mean, looking at the lines here, we both picked the Colts to win. That was bad. We both picked the Jaguars to win, and somehow Texas beat them, or the Texans, I should say, beat them.
Pretty handily, I might add.
Yeah, Tyrod Taylor looked pretty good. I'll only say that. I didn't know who he was throwing to half the time. I knew Brandon Cooks, and that was about it from the Texans roster. Like I just said, Eagles beat the Falcons. Chargers beat the football team. Steelers with a big win over the Bills. 49ers beat the Lions, though. The Lions did make it a bit interesting, I will say that. They made it a tad bit interesting because apparently San Francisco doesn't know how to field an onside kick. Jets and Panthers won that game. Cardinals, like you said, had a beatdown of Tennessee, which shocked a lot of people. Tennessee were heavy favorites coming in, and like you said, Logan, are probably going to be one of the best teams in the AFC. Well, they just got shell-shocked in their own state by an up-and-coming Arizona team. I did appreciate DeAndre Hopkins and his contributions because he is on my fantasy team, too. Broncos at the Giants, and Broncos handily won that game as well. I think San Francisco. I'm in baseball mode. I think New York needs to start looking at another cornerback because I don't think Daniel Jones is it. Packers at the Steelers. Packers at the Saints, though they're not in New Orleans. They're playing in Jacksonville, and, man, the Saints. And I told you, dude, it's Jameis Winston revenge season. He looked outstanding in that game against the Packers. Threw for, I believe, either four or five tutties. Dude looked incredible. Then on Sunday Night Football, Matthew Stafford shook off the Detroit Lions cobwebs and was just an absolute gunslinger. And the Rams easily beat the Bears. And, of course, tonight you got the Ravens at the Raiders. And, of course, since we both picked the Ravens, we know the Raiders are going to win this one. That's just how it's going to be.
It more than likely. But I just want to say something. Yes, Jameis Winston threw for 5 touchdowns. Absolutely. He only threw 20 passes. He only threw for 148 yards. Okay, so let's chill out on this whole Jameis Winston for MVP crap that I'm seeing all over the place.
Oh, Saints Twitter, and it's incredible.
Not, it's not just like people on Twitter. There's like actual sports writers saying things like that. After week one, he only threw the ball 20 times.
Yeah.
The Saints got whatever they wanted offensively, especially running the football. Alvin Kamara had a great day. 20 carries for 83 yards. Tony Jones Jr. had 11 carries for 50 yards. Jameis himself had 6 carries for 37. So you averaged 4.4 yards a carry. You rushed for 171 yards. And that opens up the pass game a little bit more. You know, the Saints' defense is who I'm more impressed with. You held Aaron Rodgers to 133 yards passing. Jordan Love actually came into the game. Mainly because it was already a blowout.
Yeah.
But the fact that you forced Aaron Rodgers to leave the game is impressive in and of itself. But the offensive line for Green Bay was really, really, really bad. Really bad. Aaron Rodgers didn't seem to have any chance to get comfortable behind the pocket, get his feet under him, make throws within the pocket. It just wasn't going to happen for him. And what else were they going to do besides drop back and throw the football with Aaron Rodgers, because they couldn't run the damn football either? A.J. Dillon was their leading rusher, 4 carries for 19 yards. They had 43 yards rushing on 15 carries. That is as one-dimensional as an offense can get whenever you cannot run the football. What are you supposed to do if you're Aaron Rodgers? There's no play action threat.
Yeah.
Nothing whatsoever. Your offensive line isn't giving you good pass protection. You can't run the football either, because the offensive line can't do anything. You're stuck in this like freaking time warp of just pure nothingness. Just this black hole of, we can't do anything offensively. And then on the defensive side, the Packers couldn't stop anything. Nothing.
It'd be so fitting for Green Bay to have Aaron Rodgers' last dance in like a 10-7, 9-6 season. And him just going into the sunset, not just being a one-time Super Bowl champion. It'd be so fitting for Green Bay. And I doubt that will happen. I still think the Packers are going to win that division. But just think, dude. Just think.
That one Super Bowl, in my opinion, is the only difference between Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford. In my mind. Matthew Stafford gets a massive amount of disrespect in his career, and I saw there was a bunch of crap on Twitter about it as well. Like, oh, yeah, everybody feels so bad saying Detroit wasted Matthew Stafford's career when he spent when 7 of those years he had Megatron. Megatron and who else? Okay,
exactly.
And then Megatron retires, and he gets, you know, Marvin Jones and Golden Tate. And who else?
No one.
A defense that finishes in the bottom 5 of the league, and a rushing offense that finishes in the bottom 5 of the league every year.
Yep.
Do you want to know? Patrick Mahomes just broke the NFL record for most passing yards in a player's first 50 games. Do you want to know who held that record before Patrick Mahomes did?
Matthew Stafford.
Okay? And we saw it. When Matthew Stafford gets put with a good team, what does he do?
Oh, he balls out.
He only went 20 for 26 for over 300 yards passing and 3 touchdowns. He was money. Because he's got a great offensive line, he's got great weapons, and a great defense. And he's got a rushing attack. None of which he had when he was in Detroit. He was constantly running for his life with that offensive line. They had a couple of guys that were halfway decent on that offensive line. They had Riley Reiff there for a long time at right tackle.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean,
other, that was than, about it.
Other than that, there's not really a whole lot going on there. The defense was horrendous. The rushing attack was horrendous. You know, his best running option during his career might have been like freaking Kerryon Johnson or a 35-year-old Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, wasn't there like a stat where like Detroit didn't have like a 100-yard rusher until like 2014, and like a couple years ago they broke that record or whatever?
Yeah, I think it was Kerryon Johnson that broke it too, if I remember correctly.
Or maybe it was DeAndre Swift.
Might have been DeAndre Swift.
But still, that's unbelievable.
I mean, what is he supposed to, what are you supposed to do? So he comes to a good franchise and he does his thing. Aaron Rodgers, the only thing saving, you know, the only thing that, in my eyes, puts Aaron Rodgers that far above Matthew Stafford. I do believe Rodgers is the more talented quarterback. But the only thing in my eyes that puts him that far above Matthew Stafford is that Super Bowl. Because frankly, aside from that Super Bowl, the Packers have generally sort of wasted Rodgers' career.
Sort of?
As good as he is.
Sort of. They have brutally wasted his career.
I will say, I will give them a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, because Rodgers and his contract that he accepted after that Super Bowl sort of set them back a lot.
Well, yeah, I know,
it
but
was,
that doesn't...
It was a very pay-heavy, it wasn't nearly as team-friendly as the Mahomes contract or what Brady's done throughout his career. They couldn't really get as much as they could, as they wanted to get, I would say, because of the Rodgers deal. But I will agree to you that they have, in a lot of ways, wasted the greatness that is Aaron Rodgers the same way the Lions did with Stafford. It just looks a little bit better because the Packers at least have that one Super Bowl, and they've been to some NFC Championship games. They've made playoff runs, right? They've been a consistent playoff team, unlike the Lions.
Right.
But they haven't been able to get to the big one, despite the fact that they've had arguably the most talented quarterback of all time in Aaron Rodgers. We'll revisit that a decade from now whenever Patrick Mahomes has his second or his third or his fourth Super Bowl and, you know, he's breaking all the records. And then we could say, Mahomes is the most talented quarterback of all time. But until that point, you know, I will say that in my eyes, Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback in the history of the NFL. And the fact that he's only got one Super Bowl really, really hurts. Yeah,
shame on Green Bay. Shame. And think if Rodgers goes to Denver next year. There was some trade speculation that he would go to Denver this year, but... You know, you get him with, I think he has much more of a better chance to win a Super Bowl with Denver next year than I'd say he does with Green Bay right now. But because unlike Green Bay, Denver has a incredible defense.
I hope not.
Well, yeah, you hope not from a Chiefs perspective, from a Chiefs fan perspective.
I don't want him in the AFC, let alone the division.
Sure, fair enough. But as a football fan, I want to see it happen. I want to see Rodgers win. I honestly do. He's been, like you said, he's been totally wasted by the Green Bay Packers. And you talk about, like, the cap space and that kind of stuff. That doesn't excuse him from the fact that they drafted poor talent, that they haven't drafted wide receivers or a decent running back or a decent offensive line, like you said, around him. They have wasted picks. When your franchise is there, you have wasted his talent by not getting him the weapons that he needs. So, you know, I'm not going to feel sorry for the Green Bay organization when he hightails it out of Green Bay, gets out of Lambeau, and goes to a team that has a much more talented upside, like, say, the Denver Broncos. So,
in my eyes, and it's all going to come down to whether or not a guy retires.
Yeah, that's an option, too. He can retire.
No, not Aaron Rodgers. The team that I would like to see Aaron Rodgers end up in, a team that has a great defense, a team that has drafted a rookie running back in the first round that has a lot of talent that I believe can be an all-pro type of running back and has weapons such as Juju Smith-Schuster and Chase Claypool.
I was thinking you were going to say Pittsburgh.
Aaron Rodgers could fit in really, really well in Pittsburgh. Really well in Pittsburgh. I could also see him ending up somewhere like, I don't know, Minnesota.
Similar circumstances to Seattle, to the Steelers.
Very good defense. You've got great receivers, Adam Thielen,
Justin Jefferson.
You've got weapons, a decent offensive line, a great rushing attack in Dalvin Cook. Could be a great place for him. I'm sure Vikings fans would look at that as definitely an upgrade from Kirk Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It could be a very interesting scenario. Other than that, I don't know. I don't know where else he could end up besides maybe those three.
We'll have to wait and see. You talk about things that are interesting, and look, false hope is horrible hope. It's the worst sense of hope. the Cardinals are starting to inject their fans with this nauseating feeling.
One game back.
I know. And I said the Cardinals wouldn't make the playoffs, and I want to stick to that, but my God, they just do not go away. Over the weekend, they host the Cincinnati Reds, and in game one, they get, well, I shouldn't say they get shellacked. They lost 4-2. You're thinking, oh God, this is it. This is where they find themselves outside of the playoff race. I really thought that. I really did. Then they win Saturday, 6-4, in comeback fashion nonetheless. Okay, split it. How are they going to break my heart here? How are they going to do it on a Sunday, on a NFL Week 1 Sunday? How are they going to ruin my day? Because my NFL week was already ruined whenever the Cowboys lost to the Buccaneers, but I digress. And behind a grand total of 3 hits and just Jay Happ and everybody in that Cardinal bullpen turning back the clock and being absolute studs, Nolan Arenado hitting his 31st home run of the season, a 2-run home run, and the Cardinals winning it 2-0. Like you said, one game out. Oh, man, I don't know, dude. I want to believe. I really do. But I feel like I've done this like 30 different times throughout this season. The Cardinals, they'll like kind of creep up like, oh, we may be contenders. You know, we may qualify for a second wild card spot, then lose to the Dodgers in the wild card game. Oh, but then we lose 5 out of 6. Oh, we lose to the Pirates. We lose a series to the Brewers in which we should have won. Oh, but, you know, we're starting to win a little bit more games. Oh, no, we lose some more. When's the train going to start again? When's it going to start going downhill again is my question. Because they're now playing the Mets, who are a hot team. Just got a series win against the New York Yankees. Or at least they won last night. I don't know if they got a series win or not. And then they'll come back home and play the Padres. And I'm just thinking, dude, like, of course, and I know it's part pessimist. I know. But, you know, part of me is thinking like, all right, well, if they lose these like next 6 games to wildcard contenders, they're going to be out of it. Because afterwards, they don't play any more wildcard teams. They play the Brewers and they play the Cubs. Basically, for the next 2 weeks after this week. So, you think right here in this season, or in this week, and I've said this multiple times throughout the past 2 months, this could be the season for the Cardinals. Quite honestly, dude, it could be. And I am still under the impression that the Cardinals are just not that good enough to get that second wild card spot. But that doesn't mean that they're not totally out of it yet.
By no means are they out of it. They are right in the thick of this thing. One game back, you managed to you've won 4 of your last 5 now against the Dodgers and the Reds. You won those last 2 games of the Dodgers series to split it. You take 2 out of 3 against the Reds. It's funny that you're only 4 games above 500, but you're 1 game out of a wild card spot. Absolutely cracks me up. But this series is a big opportunity. You're right. The Mets have been playing much better as of late, but you've got some opportunities here to get some of this back, you know? And you've got Rich Hill in game one going for the Mets.
This is the AARP kind of duel here. You got Adam Wainwright versus Rich Hill, 2 dudes in their 40s that are pitching.
Yeah.
Ain't that something, dude?
Rich Hill, he's 41 years old. He's been pitching pretty well. As of late, I mean, in his 3 most recent starts, he's gone 6 full, allowed 1 earned run, 6 full, no earned runs, 5 full, 2 earned runs. And in those games, 20 strikeouts. 20 strikeouts in 17 innings pitched, which is that's pretty good, especially for a 41-year-old pitcher.
Right.
Surprisingly, though, he's got a worse ERA at home than he does on the road.
Which is weird.
His ERA this season is 3.82, but on the at home, he's got a 4.22 ERA.
Which is weird because Citi Field is usually a pitcher-friendly ballpark.
Yep. And so, I mean, there's something that can be said there. You've got a tough matchup in your second game against Marcus Stroman. You know, he's got a 2.87 ERA on the year. Another interesting thing that he's got a worse ERA at home than he does on the road. that's sort of a strange thing, but he's been very up and down as of late. His last start against the Marlins, he pitched very well. He only allowed one earned run and 6 1/3 innings. But prior to that, he's allowed at least 2 earned runs in 4 of his last 5 starts. And then you take on Tyler McGill, who has really struggled in his last 4 starts. 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 10 strikeouts, which is pretty good. 6 innings pitched, 4 earned runs, 5 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 3 2/3 innings pitched, 7 earned runs in his last 4 starts. ERA is up there. He's got a 4.06 ERA on the year. You've got chances here, right? You're not playing the Mets, where 2 of the 3 games this series, you got to go against DeGrom and Syndergaard.
Both are injured. Yeah.
You don't have to worry about those guys. So the opportunity is there. And if the pitching can continue the way that it has, you know, the bullpen, like you said, I mean, J.A. Happ in and of itself, yes, he pitched very well. Only allowed 2 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. But that bullpen was lights out. Garcia, McFarland, Cabrera, Gallegos, shut the door.
No Alex Reyes. Thank you very much, Mike Schultman.
Give him a little bit of a break. I know. Give him some rest.
Had to certainly throw him there and dig there. Though they're kind of using Reyes now as a middle reliever. But no, I'm looking at this 3-game series. You think the Cardinals would be favored in this one, in game 1, because Wainwright's starting. Game 2, I could possibly see the Cardinals. They can only lose this one, the 1 game tomorrow, because they're facing off against Marcus Stroman, who's the 3rd best pitcher in that staff. And I, this is so New York Met. Marcus Stroman has a 2.87 ERA, which is really good. If you get it under 3, you're a pretty good pitcher. He has a record of 9-12. How do you not win that many games? Actually, I know how, because you play for the New York Mets. But how? it's asinine. It really is. Because Wainwright has a similar ERA, 2.98. You're talking about, what, a cup, like 11 points? 11, like 0.11 points in ERA, if I'm doing my math right.
Yep.
I'm not good at math. But you're talking about two, like, you know what I mean. And Wainwright's 15-7. Marcus Stroman is 9-12. But anyway, I digress. And then in game 3, honestly, dude, that's a toss-up. Because Lester and McGill have similar numbers, be it record and ERA. But Lester has looked a lot better as a Cardinal than he has as a National this year. So we were actually talking with Scott Warman, the Bally Sports TV analyst, and he liked the idea of Cardinals potentially bringing back John Lester. And I'm in favor for it. Mm. Lester's been outstanding for St. Louis. So, but yeah, that's upcoming here for the Royals and Cardinals. Speaking of the Royals, they were in Minnesota this past weekend, and fortunately, were not successful. They did win. They did salvage a game yesterday. They won that one 5-3, but lost the game on Saturday 9-2, and the one on Friday 6-4. Oh wait, they won that game.
They won that game. They won 2 out of 3.
My bad. Dyslexic here. So yeah, Royals take 2 out of 3 against Minnesota and look to continue their success. You know, they're playing the Athletics for 3 games now in Kansas City. I fully expect them to sweep Oakland because the Kansas City Royals are just good against teams that, you know, they shouldn't be beating, especially at home.
That's fair.
So we'll wait and see. I may go to one of those games, honestly.
I'm just...
Since they're in town.
You know, the thing with this season for the Royals is like, it's over. You know, they're not competing for a wild card spot. Wins or losses don't really matter to me. I am just supremely focused on Salvador Perez right now and what's going on with him in the home run race. And he's sort of fallen behind a little bit. He's only hit 1 home run in the last 7 days. Need to get a little bit more. All right.
A terrible problem for, you know, Royals fans.
It is what it is. I know that sounds, you know, ridiculous to say out loud, but you know, he's a guy that is competing for the MVP. And now, based on what it looks like, Vlad Jr. coming right back at it.
Yeah.
Vlad is now tied with Ohtani for 44 home runs apiece, both of those guys. Salvi's in second with 42. Of course, Vlad's hitting .319, which is the second best in Major League Baseball, first in the American League.
Vlad is triple crown chasing right
now.
Yeah,
he is. He leads the American League in 2 of the 3 triple crown categories because, of course, Starling Marte in Miami / Oakland, National League.
American League,
National
League, American League. That's what I was talking about. Oh. He was with one team in the National League and then another one in the American League. Yeah.
Does that
I'm not sure
how that
works.
Yeah,
I'd have to look that up.
But, I mean, that would be really unfortunate if that keeps Vlad from the Triple Crown. He ends up leading the league in home runs and RBIs, but doesn't get batting average because a guy that was playing in the National League for half the year
is now in the American
League. And takes it from him. That would kind of suck.
Maybe Kansas City needs to help him out a little bit and shut down Marte for 3 games here. Make him go like 1-10, 1-11 in the series.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But, you know, Salvi's still in third in all of Major League Baseball with 42 home runs. He's second in RBIs with 105. You know, he was second and first in that category coming into the week. So, you know, falling behind a little bit. But this 3-game series is at home. And Salvador Perez has been very, very good at home. He's batting, you know, on the season, he's only batting .274.
Only.
But he's batting .306 at home. Of his 42 home runs, 22 of them have come at home. Of his 105 RBIs, 58 of them at home. You know, his on-base percentage is a .353 at home. When his on-base percentage for the year is .315. So, there's something to be said for that. Nicky Lopez is batting .300, ladies and gentlemen. Nicky Lopez is batting exactly .300. What? Somebody explain that to me. Where is this coming from? The guy was never considered a hitter coming in. He's 14th in Major League Baseball in batting average. 14th. Mind-boggling to look at. He's 7th in the American League in batting average. You know, I mean, he's hitting a higher average than guys like Xander Bogaerts, Bo Bichette, Aaron Judge, JD Martinez, Ty France. I mean, Lourdes Gurriel. Like, what is happening? He's not a power hitter by any means.
Obviously.
You know, he's only got 2 home runs, but... Man, batting .300? Nicky Lopez is leading our team in batting average at .300. Never thought I'd see the day.
Imagine a Royals fan. I love to use this reference, but imagine a Royals fan. If you told me that Nicky Lopez was going to be your team leader in batting average at .300, I'd call you crazy. Now, if I called you crazy back then and if I find you again now, I'm going to be asking you for Powerball numbers because... You don't predict stuff like that. Nicky Lopez was not a good hitter, ladies and gentlemen. He was terrible when he first got called off. He was up for Kansas City because of his defense at second base. Well, then Monsi gets injured, so they bring him up at short. And, you know, we've alluded to this on this podcast. If Monsi doesn't get injured, I don't think we see this from Nicky Lopez ever. Him getting sustainable playing time and him batting .300. I don't think that happens if Raul/Adalberto Monsi gets injured.
You're exactly right. And, you know, that makes the Royals a better team. Certainly it does. You know, you can figure out what you want to do with Adalberto Mondesi now. You know, if the right pieces are there, and I know I've said it for months that you don't want to trade Adalberto Mondesi, but if somebody's willing, you know, if somebody's willing to give up a trade with enough pieces to where you think you might be getting the better end of the deal, you're fleecing them or something, right? Fleecing the team trying to trade for Mondesi, then you go for it. Otherwise, you can start to train him at third base. And then, you know, Whit Merrifield can...
Go to the outfield,
and you can play Bobby Witt at shortstop or second base. And Nicky Lopez and him can sort of figure that out from there. But it's a pretty exciting thing to see that. You know, batting .300, he's got a .365 on base percentage, which is among the best in Major League Baseball, 25th. Nowhere near the guy in first in on base percentage in Juan Soto, who has a .457 on base percentage. He's got 119 walks, only 83 strikeouts.
You know what's crazy about Juan Soto? I don't think we're seeing the best of Juan Soto yet, in my opinion.
Which is scary.
Because he's only like, what, 20?
23?
22, 23.
22 yeah. years old?
22 years old.
October 25th, 1998. Younger than me.
And just barely older than me by about... You said it was October, right? So that'd be...
October 25th of 1998.
He's 9 months older than I am. And he is one of the better hitters in baseball. And I truly believe we haven't seen the best of him yet. He still has room to develop.
Yeah.
That's what's scary.
Scary proposition.
I can't wait to see how the Nationals are going to ruin his career.
Betting 311 this year with 25 home runs. Like I mentioned, 113 walks.
I'm pretty sure at some point he was also injured this
119
year.
Walks, excuse me. 83 strikeouts.
That's incredible. That in of itself, in today's league especially, is incredible. When you walk more than you strike out.
He's played in 132 games.
Oh, well, maybe he wasn't. I thought he had some injuries. Maybe he was on like the COVID list for a little bit. What's his home runs like?
25. 83 RBIs.
83, okay.
Yep.
See, you just said they're home runs. I meant RBIs, my bad.
Unreal. Yeah. Unreal what that means.
I can't wait to see how the Nationals are going to ruin his career over there, similar to what they did with Bryce Harper.
That's fair. That is absolutely fair.
Imagine having a generational talent like that and not winning a World Series. Nonetheless, making an NLCS, you being bounced in the division round. When you've had guys like, say, Bryce Harper, Ian Desmond in their prime, Ryan Zimmerman in their prime, Jason Worth was still a solid hitter. You had a pitching rotation of Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and, who's the other guy? Gio Gonzalez in their prime. Jordan Zimmerman was good. Imagine not winning a playoff series because of that. Unbelievable. I can't stand the Nationals. And I can't believe, like, of course, Bryce Harper leaves for Philadelphia, and then they go win a World Series. Unbelievable. But that's what baseball is. It's unbelievable. What is to be believed, though, is that we are out of time here on the Rookie Sports Report podcast. It's been fun. Talked college football, talked NFL football, Cardinals and Royals baseball, and then I ended there on a rant of the Washington Nationals, who used to be the Montreal Expos. They need to get a franchise back in Montreal, by the way. Move Tampa Bay or someone up to Montreal. Have two teams in Canada. But that's just my opinion. All right, Logan, always appreciate it, as always, and God willing, we'll do it tomorrow.
Absolutely.
For Logan Weber, I'm Matthew Rizzo. This has been the Monday edition of the Rookie Sports Report Podcast. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Bye.